What? What? What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Rabbi Shmuel Golden, the president of the Rabbinical Council of America, the largest organization of Orthodox rabbis in the world. We'll also have visits from our Too Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbert. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom and a very slightly early Chag Sameach. The holiday of Sukkot begins tonight, the eight-day-long Festival of Booths, the Feast of Tabernacles from the Torah, in which we Jews give thanks for all the gifts that God has given us in this remarkable natural world. Gratitude may not seem to be an especially natural emotion for Jews. We are much better at guilt, both feeling it and spreading it, of course, but it is at the heart of truly religious life. Gratitude's not an especially American concept these days either, and the negative political rhetoric we are hearing focuses on all that we don't have or shouldn't have said or that isn't being done well, which makes Sukkot even more important than usual this year. For Sukkot reminds us to be grateful for what we have, no matter what. It's a great lesson in appreciating the gifts we've received and acknowledging the many good things we do have. Gratitude is an experience that few of us can maintain for very long, but it is the essential source of so much that is profoundly religious and profoundly good. So this year, please try to enjoy this great festival. You can start by making a list of all that you personally have to be grateful for. Then find a way to demonstrate that gratitude each day of this eight-day festival. Perhaps you can even make it into a regular habit. Which reminds me of a greeting I received from a non-Jewish friend last week. He emailed me, "Happy Yom Kippur." When I told him that was not the usual salutation for the fast day of atonement, he emailed me back asking for forgiveness in the spirit of the season, and I promptly granted it. But I could also have told him that the truth is he was just a little early, because Sukkot, this week's holiday, is absolutely the season of happiness, Zman Simchatenu in Hebrew, once called Hechag, the holiday, as though there were no other. Sukkot has come to be a time of relaxed joy after the high drama and deep introspection of the days of awe of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Sukkot is here for gratitude and joy, and what more could you ask from a holiday? I must note one important challenge in this lovely time of year. It's that for Sukkot, we Jews do our best to build temporary structures that are supposed to last for a week. We use wood or PVC or plastic sheeting or whatever we have lying around. And the results, while always gratifying, are not always perfect. Sukkah building is fun, messy, and it annually proves that Jews are not experts at construction. I'm not saying there are no great Jewish builders. In fact, Tucson seems well populated with both Jewish builders and developers. But most of the rest of us are not precisely Bob Vila, or even Bob the Builder. You see, Jewish boys are raised to be doctors, not handy men. As Jackie Mason has noted, those of us who weren't smart enough to be doctors became lawyers. Complete failures became accountants. And for those of us whose moms were sure we weren't really capable enough to tie our own shoes, we became rabbis. But no Jewish parent, and I mean none, expects her or his son to become a builder. And around Sukkot, taka, it sometimes shows. I have to admit, though, some of my best friends and some of our best sponsors on Too Jewish are builders. And some of my best Jewish experiences revolve around Sukkot, especially the process of designing and building a sukkah, sometimes my own sukkah. More in a moment on that. To get us in the mood in this season of celebration, here's a psalm from Hallel, the service we will sing each day of the holiday of Sukkot, Hodu Ladonai, give thanks to God, for God is good. God's loving kindness endures forever. From the CD Festival Delights from Cantor Abe Mizrahi for Sukkot, which begins tonight. Hodu Ladonai Kito. Hodu Ladonai, give thanks to God, for God is good. From the Hallel for Sukkot. My favorite Sukkot story involves my grandfather on my mom's side, my Zadie Lou, who was famous for never throwing anything out, ever. Kind of like me. When he and my bubby Dora moved out to California back in 1948, he took along a multitude of glass jars filled with screws, bolts, nuts, and washers, and he took the chains to attach storm windows for the winter, perhaps not realizing that storm windows are not a staple of life in sunny Southern California. Anyway, one year, my Zadie Lou and my dad were putting up a sukkah in the backyard. Neither one was a precise builder exactly, but they both worked with enthusiasm. They had the sukkah just about built out of old plywood, scraps of 2x4s, and leftover wooden crates. Wasn't much to see, but they were very proud of it, and they stepped back to admire it when they noticed it was not just a tabernacle, but a lean-to, and it was leaning way over to the left. My Zadie Lou and my dad stood back sweating and looked at the sloping sukkah. Well, if we had some way to pull it back to the right, maybe it would be okay for sukkahs, my dad suggested. It'll last for a week. We can throw something over the apricot tree to pull it straight. My Zadie Lou said, I've got just the thing in the garage. So he went and rummaged around in a garage full of those glass jars of screws, bolts, washers, and nuts imported from the East Coast, and found what he needed, the chains from the New Jersey storm windows that had traveled 3,000 miles to California. My Zadie Lou and Dad slung the big chains over a branch of the apricot tree, attached it to the right side of the sukkah, and then my dad pulled on it, and the sukkah lurched over to the right, but a little too far to be called straight. Oy, Zadie Lou said, maybe if we throw the other chain over the left side of the sukkah, we'll straighten it out that way. And so the second storm window chain went over the apricot tree and around the left side of the sukkah, and my Zadie Lou pulled on that chain, and the sukkah pulled back left, again, a little too far to be centered. So my dad pulled on his chain, and the sukkah moved right, and my Zadie Lou pulled on his window chain, and the sukkah moved left, and so on, and they tried to even out this great tabernacle without great success. Back and forth went the sukkah seesaw. Meanwhile, my mom's mother, my bubby Dora, had come outside to watch the proceedings. She stood quietly, wiping her hands on her apron, hands on her hips, viewing the spectacle, left, right, sukkah, left, right. Finally, she spoke in Yiddish. Sholem Aleichem is gestorben vor der Zeit. The great Yiddish humorist Sholem Aleichem died too young. He only should have lived to see this. Well, nowadays we use an easier recipe for a sukkah. You can start with a ramada or a frame, add a couple of trellis walls, lightly cover with palm fronds, hang fruit and greeting cards, and enjoy while fresh. Serves a family and guests for about a week. By the way, a last sukkah joke. How do you make a lulav shake? put it in a blender with two scoops of ice cream. We have a lot to give. Sorry. We have a lot to give thanks for this week, including our two Jewish guests this morning. He is an important figure in the modern Orthodox world, Rabbi Shmuel Golden, an articulate, accomplished, and healing figure who is president of the Rabbinical Council of America, the largest organization of Orthodox rabbis in the world. Meet him and find out what makes his position particularly tough when we come back on Two Jewish.
Hi, Joe Spina, Mama's Pizza. You know, it's common knowledge that what's large to one person may appear small to another. Take pizza, for example. Some places sell a, quote, large pizza for a pretty large price. Then surprise, you get it home, it barely feeds three people. Some places sell you two large pizzas for the price of one. Believe me, they can't be too large unless they're using real cheap ingredients. But that's a subject for another commercial. Anyway, at Mama's, we think our family-sized pizza should be the yardstick for measuring all pizzas. In fact, you need a yardstick to measure it. The bottom line is that pizza size is all relative. And on behalf of all my relatives, we invite you to Mama's to try one of our pizzas, no matter what size. After all, every Mama's Pizza has a taste that's huge. Mama's Pizza with four convenient locations. You can check them all out at mamasfamous.com. Now repeat after me. Mama's Pizza.
Parents in Tucson have many choices on where to send their children to school. Consider the best. Consider Tucson Hebrew Academy. Now is the time to secure your spot for the upcoming school year. With a beautiful Foothills K-8 campus and award-winning academics, you owe it to your children to visit THA, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and see what they have to offer. Your child belongs at THA. THA delivers. Low student-teacher ratio supports successful, rigorous academics, and they don't stop there. With an emphasis on the arts, science, and music, THA students learn the Hebrew language and are taught Jewish values along with a rigorous academic curriculum. Your child deserves the best. Call 529-3888 to schedule your tour of THA. Financial aid is available. Don't wait. Space is limited. That's 529-3888 or visit www.thaaz.org.
We're delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Rabbi Shmuel Golden. He's the president of the Rabbinical Council of America, the largest Orthodox rabbinical body in the world. He heads Englewood, New Jersey's congregation Ahava Torah, the largest Orthodox congregation in North Jersey. He was previously an officer in the modern Orthodox rabbinical organization in the 1990s, but maybe more about that story later. The RCA includes rabbis ordained by dozens of yeshivot and many prominent rabbinic personalities. During its many decades, it's been led by outstanding rabbinic people, such as the Rav, Rabbi Joseph Ber Soloveitchik of blessed memory, who was the guiding spirit and mentor of the RCA. We're delighted to have Rabbi Shmuel Golden. Boker Tov, good morning, and Chag Sameach.
Chag Sameach and Boker Tov.
Tell us a little bit about how it was that you ended up becoming president of the RCA when you did.
I had not been involved for a long period of time. And, you know, if you want, we can talk about that a little bit. But I was called by Rabbi Kenneth Hain, who is the, is a past president of the RCA. And he said that it was important to try to find someone who could hopefully bridge some of the factions within the RCA and unite the RCA and deal with direction a little bit. I was honored that he felt that I could do that. I was humbled by it, gave it some thought, and said that I would be willing to first become the first vice president under Rabbi Moshe Kretenik and then the president for the last year and a half or so.
You mentioned that you were very involved. You were very involved in the leadership back, I think, in the 1990s, and then were out for a while. The RCA, like so many Jewish organizations, has its fractures. Maybe you can address some of that.
Well, at that particular time, it was the time of the Oslo Accords, and I had taken a position which was perceived by many within the Orthodox community as somewhat controversial. Position that I took, at least the way I verbalized it, was that we within the diaspora are limited partners with Israel, and if Israel was embarking on this path and attempting to pursue a path of peace with its neighbors, that it was our responsibility not to publicly oppose it in the state. Many within the Orthodox community were very upset with the position that I took. And the RCA sort of felt that it wasn't, that I was sort of disinvited from my position of leadership is probably the best way to put it.
Modern Orthodoxy often takes a back seat in the public perception in America to the ultra-Orthodox community, to some of the Hasidim. But the majority of Orthodox Jews in America would classify themselves as modern Orthodox, wouldn't they?
I think that's probably correct. I don't know the statistics, but certainly the modern Orthodox community, which is an extremely broad and varied community, is very large and needs to make its voice heard better.
We will talk much more with Rabbi Shmuel Golden, the president of the Rabbinical Council of America, the largest Orthodox rabbinical body in the world, when we come back in a few moments here on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website or download us from there or at the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcasts. And here is our weekly 2012 presidential election campaign Jewish moment. Is there space now between the Obama administration and Israel enough to talk about daylight showing? In the U.S.-Israel relationship, the buzzword of daylight is back, but this time it's Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu who's being called on to narrow the gap and draw down the shades on the daylight. Netanyahu's recent sharp rebuke of the Obama administration's Iran policies and President Obama's refusal to draw a red line in front of Iran's nuclear program has now drawn pushback from Jewish Democrats. In the first year of both governments, a long time ago, well, okay, only 3.5 years ago, President Obama was largely accused for allowing daylight between the two close allies at that time because of differences over how to deal with the Palestinians. Then, as now, the pro-Israel community is in the middle, pleading for calm. The concern of the pro-Israel community for some of the things Bibi has said is that they look disrespectful, which is not smart, said a member of the large pro-Israel community, who is also a Democrat. On Rosh Hashanah Eve, AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, made a strong public statement affirming Obama's support for Israel. Was a signal that the pro-Israel lobbying group was seeking to right the vessel of U.S.-Israel friendship. The statement was unusual. AIPAC rarely issues any statements that are unrelated to pending legislation. Additionally, to name only one presidential candidate less than 2 months before voting day is exceptional for AIPAC, although the statement focused only on elected officials and also praised Representative John Boehner, the Speaker of the U.S. House. Some Jewish Democrats and Israeli politicians, too, have accused Netanyahu of playing U.S. presidential politics, which Bibi denies. God, I'm not going to be drawn into the American election, he said on Meet the Press. And what's guiding my statements is not the American political calendar, but the Iranian nuclear calendar. Well, will all of this affect the outcome of the presidential contest in November, particularly in states like Florida or Ohio, where the Jewish vote is crucial? Don't know. Stay tuned. That was our campaign 2012 Jewish election moment. We welcome our maven on Israel, Guy Gilbert, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Guy, Boker Tov and Chag Sameach, a happy holiday of Sukkot beginning tonight.
Chag Sameach, happy Sukkot.
Sukkot is a great outdoor festival and very well celebrated in Israel among secular and religious Jews. Let's talk about it a little bit.
Sukkot is to some degree, and I hope all the women that are listening won't think that I'm chauvinist, but at least in Israel, it's a lot of father's holiday. Because that's the holiday where the father is taking the kids out, picking some wood, bringing some nails and a hammer, and building the hut, building the sukkah. And, you know, that's for, I can remember myself as a kid, there is nothing that symbolizes what a daddy is more than seeing your daddy with the hammer and the nail building the sukkah. You know, it's so mannish. It's so, you're so proud of your father building all those stuff, and like in an hour and all the hut is up there and you bring the schach. How do you say schach in English?
Schach, I think, is the technical term. Palm fronds or leaves that you put on top of the sukkah as your roof.
And you put it on the roof and you make sure that you can still see the stars. You need to make sure that, I think, only 70% is covered or something of that
sort. Enough
to see the stars. And then mommy comes along and she says, okay, let's decorate the sukkah. And you take those papers, colorful papers. You use the scissors to cut and make those chains out of paper. I didn't see a lot of kids doing that here in the States. In Israel, that's probably the most common activity you can see around Sukkot. Kids sitting with their mothers, today with their fathers as well, and make those chains together, decorate the sukkah. A lot of people bring vegetables and also put them in the sukkah.
We do fruit too, also. Anything, apples come up this time of year, so lots of good stuff to put in the sukkah.
Which is really fun. It's really a lot of family fun holiday. You build the sukkah together, then you sit to eat dinner together at the sukkah. If you're more observant, you will eat all your meals in the sukkah.
And even sleep in the sukkah, camp out.
And even sleep.
Right? And of course, invite ushpizin, guests, to come join you.
Yeah, and guests is one of the best things to do in Israel at Sukkot is to do sukkah hopping, where you basically become the ushpizin. You're going to other people's sukkah, and you can take the kids and walk from one sukkah to the other, and all the street is packed with sukkahs all around them. You know, you can go to the parks and see a lot of sukkahs anywhere that one can build. It could be the balcony, it can be the backyard, it could be out in the street. So it's really a lot of fun.
Great holiday to celebrate. And you can do this here in America. There's still time to build your sukkah before Sukkot starts tonight. Thanks, Guy. Chag Sameach.
Chag Sameach.
When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week.
Everything you always wanted to know about Judaism, but were afraid to ask. A Taste of Judaism, the largest and most successful outreach program in the country, celebrates its 13th anniversary year with a brand new family class and in a new location. Over 5,000 people have completed the course offered by Temple Emmanuel, Arizona's first congregation. It's your turn now. Taste of Judaism is free and open to all, Jewish or not, and we feed you too. Rabbi Sam Kohan and Rabbi Jason Holtz lead an open, interactive exploration of the history and practice of Judaism in 3 2-hour sessions on spirituality, values, and community. Classes are offered all over the Tucson area, and enrollment is easy. Call 520-327-4501 to sign up. Taste of Judaism is a tremendously successful education and outreach program and an exciting learning opportunity for anyone who is simply curious about Judaism or who wants to deepen their knowledge and gain an understanding of Jewish culture, history, rituals, community, and practice. The classes include delicious tastes of traditional Jewish foods. The sessions are free and open to all, regardless of religious background. But you do need to pre-enroll by calling 520-327-4501. This year, Taste of Judaism is offering both daytime and evening classes in Central, Northwest, and East Tucson, and the very popular Taste of Judaism family class held at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Adults enjoy a grown-up taste class with rabbis, while kids have their own Taste of Judaism children's program with Jewish stories, crafts, and activities with excellent THA teachers. It's a great learning opportunity for the whole family. There is no fee or obligation, but space is limited and pre-registration is required. Call Bila Anderson at 520-327-4501 for more information and register today.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. from traditional services to the unique. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
And Chag Sameach, happy holiday of Sukkot, beginning tonight. We've been talking about the second commandment, the commandment against worshiping other gods, and exploring some of the differences that made Judaism unique and also put us sort of at odds with the majority culture virtually everywhere except Israel and some parts of New York City. I'm thinking about how when I go on trips to Europe, I have a wonderful time. And after about 2-3 weeks, maybe even less than that, I just get a little tired of the cathedrals and the depictions of Jesus and the Madonna. And that's the majority culture kind of swirling around. But it's not today's culture. What are the gods that we are so easily seduced into worshiping that are sort of not God?
Right. I think you make a really important point, Rabbi, and that is that a lot of the churches and cathedrals in Europe that were so grand and represented, you know, the apex of art and culture,
society,
and
civilization, right,
and human aspiration at certain times, 13th, 14th, 15th centuries, etc., today are being converted fairly rapidly to clubs, bistros, restaurants, because people don't go to them anymore. I mean, they're mostly either museums or they serve other purposes. It's not to say that Christianity is gone from Europe. It's just to say that people express their religion in different ways. But we definitely live in a world where our belief in God, our relationship to God, our adherence to the covenant, however we define that, and there are plenty of differences among Jews and within the Jewish community on that question, it sets us apart. And I think in today's world, most people don't have an idol in the backyard or worship in some heathen temple or worship a holy tree, but they do approach other things as if they're gods, as if with the intensity of a religion, whether it's, you know, football in the South or certain logos and brand names or the pursuit of admission to the right college. I mean, think how many parents make countless decisions for their kids from the time the kid is 3 or 4 based on their belief that there's little more important in that kid's life than, quote, getting into the right college, close quotes. I mean, I know people. I could tell you stories, and I'm sure you do too. And so that becomes, in my view, a kind of violation of the commandment of, you will have no other gods before me. Worship me, adhere to my covenant, everything else falls into place. We make choices in life, but we rarely make those choices keeping that commandment in mind. And even if we keep that commandment in mind, we rarely think about the implications of our being bound by a covenant with our God, our one and only God, and that those obligations, those commitments, really preclude doing certain other things.
You know, as we are in the beginning stages of this new year, about to celebrate the Festival of Thanksgiving to God, really good time to kind of remember that dedication, that central Jewish dedication, is to God and to living a moral life, even above football games and rock concerts and, oh, I don't know.
And the right college.
And golf. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
Chag Sameach.
Also to you.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service, with an assist by my radio friend Charles Heller, who passed along this joke. A woman jumps into a cab in New York. The cabbie, an older Jewish guy, notices in the rearview mirror with alarm that she is not wearing any clothes. He stares in the mirror at the woman and makes no attempt to start the cab. The woman glares back at the cabbie and says, "What's wrong with you? Haven't you seen a naked woman before?" The old Jewish driver answers, "Well, let me tell you something, lady. I wasn't staring at you like you think. That would not be proper where I come from." The woman responds, "Well, if you're not staring at me, what are you doing then?" "Well, ma'am, I'm looking, and I'm thinking to myself."
Where is this lady keeping the money to pay for the ride? That was the old Jewish joke of the week. Special feature, too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well and wear clothes. And now a word of Torah. This week we read the special selections from the Torah to honor the holiday of Sukkot. Beginning tonight and lasting for 8 days, this season is an embarrassment of holiday riches for Jews, and the Torah readings reflect this. Sukkot marks the great fall Thanksgiving festival, the Feast of Tabernacles or Booths, and we are commanded to remember the transitory nature of our ancestors' wanderings through the wilderness of Sinai, as well as the transitory nature of our own lives. In the season of the fall harvest, when we eat the first and best of the produce of the natural world, we take a week to demonstrate our gratitude for the necessities of life, food, shelter, and clothing. And in this week's Torah reading, we receive the mitzvah to build a sukkah, a temporary booth or hut outdoors, designed to last just a week, well, 8 days, to eat in and perhaps to sleep in. We decorate it with the symbols of the harvest, fruits and vegetables, and enjoy a harvest festival celebrating the goodness of the world God has given us. It's a lesson in appreciating the gifts we've received, appreciating the many good things we have. So may we each be dedicated to gratitude in this week. But while gratitude and joy are the prevailing themes of the Festival of Sukkot and its Torah readings, there is one special additional reading that we include on this festival that's not from the Torah. Instead, it's from the latter stages of the Bible, the Ketuvim, or writings, Ecclesiastes, Kohelet. The beautiful biblical book that is chanted on the Shabbat of Sukkot is perhaps the single most gorgeous piece of literature in all history. Succinct, poetic, and wise. It includes famous phrases that have become part of our lexicon, like the sun also rises, there is nothing new under the sun, all rivers run to the sea and the sea is not full. For everything there is a time and a season for every purpose under heaven. The dust returns to the earth that it was, but the spirit returns to God who gave it. The conclusion of Ecclesiastes is simple but powerful. After a poetic search of wisdom and folly, a survey of what the world has to offer, the author writes, "The conclusion of the matter, all having been heard, is to revere God. Keep the mitzvot, for that makes the complete human being." As autumn approaches, Kohelet reminds us that so much of what we do is vanity. Vanity of vanity, all is vanity, the book begins, and compels us to realize that God is our true source of meaning and beauty. At this joyous time of year, it's a sobering but magnificent reminder of all that really matters. Even, perhaps especially at seasons of joy and times of gladness, we must remember that our greatest success comes from our integrity and our belief. When we come back on Too Jewish, our guest, Rabbi Shmuel Golden, the president of the Rabbinical Council of America, will tell us what is happening these days in the modern Orthodox world and just what the greatest challenges facing American Judaism are today. Find out when we come back on Too Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
Everything you always wanted to know about Judaism, but were afraid to ask. A Taste of Judaism, the largest and most successful outreach program in the country, celebrates its 13th anniversary year with a brand new family class and in a new location. Over 5,000 people have completed the course offered by Temple Emmanuel, Arizona's first congregation. It's your turn now. Taste of Judaism is free and open to all, Jewish or not. And we feed you, too. Rabbi Sam Kohan and Rabbi Jason Holtz lead an open, interactive exploration of the history and practice of Judaism in 3 2-hour sessions on spirituality, values, and community. Classes are offered all over the Tucson area, and enrollment is easy. Call 520-327-4501 to sign up. Taste of Judaism is a tremendously successful education and outreach program and an exciting learning opportunity for anyone who is simply curious about Judaism or who wants to deepen their knowledge and gain an understanding of Jewish culture, history, rituals, community, and practice. The classes include delicious tastes of traditional Jewish foods. The sessions are free and open to all, regardless of religious background. But you do need to pre-enroll by calling 520-327-4501. This year, Taste of Judaism is offering both daytime and evening classes in Central, Northwest, and East Tucson, and the very popular Taste of Judaism family class held at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Adults enjoy a grown-up taste class with rabbis, while kids have their own Taste of Judaism children's program with Jewish stories, crafts, and activities with excellent THA teachers. It's a great learning opportunity for the whole family. There is no fee or obligation, but space is limited and pre-registration is required. Call Mila Anderson at 520-327-4501 for more information and register today.
We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
In his speech to the UN General Assembly last week, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas said he has opened talks on a new bid for international recognition at the UN, but he didn't specify exactly when he will ask the General Assembly to vote. Abbas said that intensive consultations with the various regional organizations and the state members were underway. The Palestinians apparently will apply to the General Assembly for non-member state status. That stands in sharp contrast to 12 months ago. Last year, they asked the Security Council to admit them as a full member state, Palestine. But the bid failed in the face of American, Israeli, and later much larger resistance. Abbas insisted that the new quest for Palestinian recognition was not seeking to delegitimize Israel, but rather establish a state that should be established, Palestine. Palestinian officials said their new scaled-down, more sensitive-to-Israel bid is likely to be submitted on November 29th. We'll see. What gathered more attention than Abbas this time around at the UN was Iran, speaking on Yom Kippur. Marvelous timing by the World's Organization of Nations insensitive to the fact that it is the holiest day of the year for Jews. Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, Iran's clinically insane president, said that his country was under constant threat of military action from, quote, uncivilized Zionists, and called for a new world order not dominated by Western powers in the service of, also a quote, the devil. In his 8th address to the UN General Assembly's annual gathering of world leaders and other similar madmen, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad painted a gloomy picture of a world driven by greed rather than moral values like he represents. Without mentioning the U.S. by name, Ahmadinejad took aim at Washington's global dominance, asking, are we to believe that those who spend hundreds of millions of dollars on election campaigns have the interests of the people of the world at their hearts? The current abysmal situation of the world and the bitter incidents of history are due mainly to the wrong management of the world, and the self-proclaimed centers of power have entrusted themselves to the devil, Ahmadinejad said. It is expected to be his last address to the U.N. Thank God for small favors. Ahmadinejad did not repeat his comments to journalists in New York earlier last week that Israel has no roots in the Middle East and will be eliminated. However, in a clear reference to Israel, he told the UN Assembly, continued threat by the uncivilized Zionists to resort to military action against our great nation is a clear example of this bitter reality. Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu issued a statement condemning Ahmadinejad's speech just after the Yom Kippur fast ended in Israel. On the day when we pray to be inscribed in the Book of Life, a platform was given to a dictatorial regime that strives at every opportunity to sentence us to death, Netanyahu said. True enough. Earlier last week, in his address to the General Assembly, U.S. President Barack Obama warned Iran he would do what it takes to prevent it from getting nuclear arms. and he said there was not an unlimited time to solve the crisis by diplomacy. Make no mistake, a nuclear-armed Iran is not a challenge that can be contained, Obama said. It would threaten the elimination of Israel, the security of Gulf nations, and the stability of the global economy. It risks triggering a nuclear arms race in the region and the unraveling of the non-proliferation treaty. That's why a coalition of countries is holding the Iranian government accountable. And that's why the U.S. will do what we must to prevent Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon. In his own dramatic speech to the U.N. the day after Yom Kippur, Bibi used a diagram to hammer home his plea to the international community to set a clear red line over Iran's nuclear program, warning that a nuclear-armed Iran will be tantamount to a nuclear-armed al-Qaeda. Netanyahu's address before the UN General Assembly was an appeal to the U.S. and other nations to join Israel in drawing a line that Iran cannot cross without risking military response. He argued that nothing less than the security of the world is at stake. The red line must be drawn on Iran's nuclear enrichment program, Netanyahu said. I believe that faced with a clear red line, Iran will back down. The prime minister displayed a diagram of a crudely drawn bomb divided into sections representing the three stages of uranium enrichment. Using a marker, maybe a Sharpie, I don't know, Netanyahu drew a red line before the end of the second stage. He began his address with an implicit rebuke to Iran's maniac, Ahmadinejad, speaking of the history of the Jewish people's tie to the land of Israel, vowing that we will remain there. Throughout our history, the Jewish people has overcome all the tyrants who sought our destruction, he said. The Jewish people have come home. We will never be uprooted again. In other news, in France, French far-right leader Marine Le Pen called last week for a ban on the wearing of Muslim veils and Jewish yarmulkes in public, adding to the religious tensions sparked by various things swirling around the Islamic world. In an interview with the newspaper Le Monde, Le Pen called for religious headwear to be banned in stores, on public transport, and on the streets. Asked whether the ban should apply to the Jewish head covering, known of course as the kippah or yarmulke, as well as the Muslim headwear, she said it is obvious that if the veil is banned, the kippah is banned in public as well. Le Pen, who shocked the French by winning almost 18% in the first round of their presidential vote this year, also repeated calls for bans on public prayers, kosher and halal food in schools, and foreign government financing of mosques in France. President François Hollande of France denounced her comments, saying, "Everything that tears people apart, opposes them, and divides them is inappropriate. We must apply the rules, the only rules we know, the rules of the Republic and secularism." Jean-François Cope, who leads the right-wing UMP party of former President Nicolas Sarkozy, said Le Pen shows little understanding of France's much-vaunted traditions. Marine Le Pen wants to ban any signs of religion on the street, starting with the veil and the kippah. By doing this, she shows she understands nothing of secularism. Secularism is not the eradication of all religious expressions in society. And in some good news here in the U.S., the Transportation Safety Administration, the TSA, has decreed that lulavs and etrogs, that's the palm, myrtle, and willow, and the small citron that make up the species we need to celebrate the festival, these pieces of foliage and fruit can now travel on regular airplanes during the holiday of Sukkot. Apparently, they do not represent a security risk. What a relief. But the airlines are seriously looking into just how much of a baggage fee they can throw on top of them. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Around the World. We are delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Rabbi Shmuel Golden. He's the president of the Rabbinical Council of America, the largest Orthodox rabbinical body in the world. He's the head of Englewood, New Jersey's Congregation Ahava Torah, the largest Orthodox congregation in North Jersey, and has been an active voice for modern Orthodoxy in America. The RCA, the Rabbinical Council of America, is the most influential Orthodox rabbinical organization, particularly for modern Orthodox Jews. Was sort of the, I guess, I don't know, the guiding spirit of it was Rabbi Yosef Ber Soloveitchik, the Rav, one of the most important rabbinical personalities of the 20th century as well. Rabbi Golden, the RCA has a very diverse membership. Is it particularly challenging to hold things together, if you will?
It is extremely challenging. Today's I think the world today is very fractured in many ways, and very often you have a lot of people going to extremes. And any organization that tries to chart a moderate middle course between those extremes is going to meet with great challenge.
This polarization, we see it between secular Jews and religious Jews in Israel. We see it in America. We sometimes think it's between Reform and Orthodox, but might be more properly described as between unaffiliated Jews and anybody affiliated. But within Orthodoxy, can you sort of outline the different perspectives that you have to meld together in this organization?
The organization consists of over 1,000 rabbis.
That's already a frightening concept, I have to tell you.
Is it not? and given that it consists of such a large number, coming from a wide array of yeshivot seminaries, basically it features people who have very, very different postures on everything, ranging from politics in Israel to religious outlook to how we should respond to those who feel differently than we do. And these various different voices are often very strident. What has exacerbated the challenge is that we're living in a day when everybody has a voice. It used to be that if you had a lot of people in an organization, and there were people at the extremes, they might complain, but they would complain by calling you up, or they would complain by discussing it with you. There wouldn't be an opportunity for some discourse. Today, with the advent of communication on the internet, and emails, and Google groups, chat groups, and blogs, the opportunity for everyone to have a public voice makes it that much more difficult for organizations such as ours, because very often it's hard to gauge. Just because someone is public and someone is loud does not necessarily mean that he represents a large constituent. And gauging these various different positions, trying to chart a course that is meaningful and appropriate, is a very challenging.
Even amidst all of the fracturing going on within the Jewish world, it seems to me that modern Orthodoxy is growing in America now. Is that a reasonable assumption?
You know, it's hard to know the statistics. It's also hard to define exactly what modern Orthodoxy is and what its parameters and borders are. But yes, our assessment is that modern Orthodoxy is growing. Our communities are burgeoning in many cases. There's a tremendous amount of activity and tremendous amount of interest.
In that context, there might be a tendency for triumphalism, that may be the wrong term, but a certain amount of pride. But the level of unaffiliation among American Jews, of course, is increasing dramatically. You've spoken about the need for outreach to the unaffiliated. Can you explain how that works from your perspective?
I think the modern Orthodox community and a number of other people have said it, as well, has a very, very significant role to play today in trying to bridge the chasm that exists in understanding between the Orthodox community and the unaffiliated and the non-Orthodox, even affiliated Jews. And unfortunately, I think part of my frustration is that very often we aren't spending our time doing that. We're spending our time internally dealing with our own issues, dealing with our own fractures, and I'm hoping for the moment and the time when we can sort of put a lot of those things behind us or set them aside and begin to recognize that if someday, and I feel this very, very keenly, someday I think God is going to call us to task for having presided over, on some level, the disappearance of, God forbid, the disappearance of one of the largest Jewish communities in the world, if not the largest, certainly the largest or the second largest. And there's a lot we can do, and we're not doing it, and it's frustrating.
And there's been a hot-button issue lately that came forward in New York that the RCA took a position on, which has to do with circumcision, not the question of circumcision itself, but a practice that the RCA does not approve of, the Metzitza Bepeh, Can you talk about the RCA's position on that and your experience in dealing with this current issue?
Now, the issue that has risen is that Matika that traditionally was always done directly by the Moel, mouth to body with the child. Over the last number of years, questions have come up as to whether or not more sterile procedures can be followed. And one option that has been developed, and the most prevalent option, is to use a pipette or a tube so that there is no direct contact between the Moel and the child. We, within the RCA, agree with this practice. We consider it not only halakhically acceptable, but we consider it preferable. And we know that Rav Soloveitchik felt this way as well. And we therefore tell our Moalim and we tell our communities that this is an absolutely acceptable practice, that Matzitza can be done with this pipette and thus maintaining a sterile procedure. And we push this hard. There are other elements within the Orthodox community who do not agree with this halachic posture. And that creates a problem. On the one hand, they have a right to disagree with us, and halachic disputes are, as you know, characteristic of our people. But at the same time, they are coming under attack, if you will, by some within the medical community. And there is an effort, a governmental effort, to sort of begin to standardize this. And the most immediate effort seems to be to have anyone who is about to have a bris milah, if the Moel is going to do Matzitza B'peh, to sign a waiver or to sign a consent. Those communities are very much against this because they feel that it will open the door to governmental regulation of religious ritual. And they see it not just as an opportunity, not this particular issue, but they see it as the beginning of a slippery slope that may now, what if the government turns around and says, you know what, for sterile procedure, you can't do it in synagogues anymore, you have to do it in the hospital. Our position is as follows. Again, we push the Matzitza B'peh through the pipette in a sterile process that the government and the medical community finds appropriate. We understand and respect the religious posture of others. We do not feel that governmental regulation in this area is going to be beneficial because we believe it will create a standoff with that religious community, and the very community that they're going to try to regulate is going to work hard not to participate in this, and it's going to cause an impasse rather than a solution. We therefore urge the government, state government, city government, to sit down with those communities and to try to arrive at a mutually agreed to solution. And that's been our position.
I want to thank Rabbi Shmuel Golden for a great visit here on Too Jewish, a very frank and candid and really much appreciated visit. Where can people go to find out more about the Rabbinical Council of America?
Our offices are in the city. Where rabbis.org is our website, RABBIS, rabbis. If anyone wants to communicate with me directly, my email, I'll be happy to give it out, is rgoldin, G-O-L-D-I-N, @ahavattorah.org, ahavattorah.org.
I want to thank you again, Rabbi Golden, and wish you a Chag Sameach.
Thank you for having me. It's been an honor. Thank you very much.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 a.m. Our guest will be Dr. Harry Ostreyer, author of Legacy, A Genetic History of the Jewish People. Our playout this morning comes from the choir of the Rabbinical Seminary in Budapest. Simchu b'Yerushalayim, rejoice, Jerusalem, for the coming festival of Sukkot that starts tonight, the Zman Simchatenu, the season of our joy. My friends, may you be blessed with a Chag Sameach, a happy holiday of Sukkot, and may you have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.